Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show today planned for you. My guest is going to be Kiana Nicky. She's the executive director of Just Food, which is a nonprofit organization based in New York City that galvanizes small-scale farmers, producers, and community members throughout the region. And we'll be telling you more about Just Food in a little bit when Kiana joins me on the show. First, I want to just go over some things going on in and around the area with you and tell you some things that are in the news. Many of you have heard me talk about this other nonprofit called Community Solidarity, which really is an amazing organization that collects food waste. It's not wasted yet, but food from different restaurants and mostly actually food stores like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, and keeps it from getting into the trash and repurposes it and hands it out to people who really appreciate the food at different community sites throughout the Long Island and Brooklyn region. And they're just amazing. But they also collect anything that you're ready to give away, you can bring there and somebody will find use for it. So right now they're really putting out a call to the community for clothes, warm clothes, coats, blankets, sleeping bags, because there's a lot of people really dealing with the cold who need a little bit of help. So check out Community Solidarity online. And if you have any blankets, sleeping bags, warm items, please bring them down to one of their sites. I was at, you know, participated in or sat in the audience. I wasn't a participant. Sat in the audience of the Real Truth About Health conference this past week. And it was just amazing to hear all the different people talking about food as medicine and, you know, things that we need to look out for, not only in our food system, but also environmentally and what we can do to keep ourselves healthy. However, so many of us are getting sick. You know, they asked in the audience how many people were touched by, you know, knew someone who was shot in a movie theater, you know, with gun violence, or how many people, you know, were killed in a car accident, you know, those kind of things. And then how many people were touched by cancer, and everybody's hand in the audience went up. I mean, everyone knows someone who has cancer. It's just so prevalent in our, you know, society today. And, you know, food really can play a big part into that, as well as all these other issues environmentally. So I just want to put it out to all of you to really think about using food as medicine, and really think twice when you go to a doctor and they say, take this pill. In the news over the last, you know, months, and it seems almost like every day, you know, there's articles in the news about pharmaceutical companies keeping secrets the addictiveness of their prescriptions, or being paid off to write about a certain drug in a medical journal. And it just goes on and on. I mean, just last week, it was revealed that the Purdue Pharma and members of the Sackler family knew that OxyContin was addictive, and yet they kept that hidden. And then the big PR firm that they use, you know, that's a big, high-powered management firm, McKinsey & Company, instructed them on ways to skew the story so that it didn't look like they were addictive. And, you know, you just have to realize that the amount of money that is made on pharmaceuticals is such a big business. And it just, you know, that's just the tip of it. It just goes down the line how everybody makes money when we're sick. And if they get us healthy, they lose a lot of business. So, you know, this week I'm actually came down to Florida to visit ashram that I have many friends at in Florida. And even there, you know, there were many people that were being, you know, hit with cancer, and the variety of different ways that people were going about treating it was just really amazing. It was this little microcosm of our society, and, you know, people doing different food diets, some people doing traditional with alternative, all different complementary modalities, from ozone to infrared to just plant-based to keto to, I mean, just, it just, the list just went on. It was just amazing. But anyway, I just really want to reach out to all of you and suggest that, as confusing as it is, that you do research and really just find what's best for you. But, you know, the days are over when we can just trust without question what our doctor tells us. You have to really know who the doctor is and where they're coming from and what their belief system is before you really want to go trusting it full-fledged. Some things that are going on in the area that you want to know about. On February 11th, there's a screening locally in Huntington on a documentary called Generation Zapped, and I was privileged to see that film a few weeks back at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. Great film. I believe you can get it on Netflix, but it's important. It's you know, it's a film talking about the electromagnetic fields and the amount of radiation waves that we are all subjected to on a daily basis. And we don't even give that a second thought. I mean, cell phones certainly are here to stay. No one's going to give them up at this point. But they, you know, they exude radioactive waves, and they are, you know, something to keep away from your body. So you don't want to put them right up to your ear. You don't want to tuck them into your bra or into your pants pocket because they can affect your organs. So give it some thought and check out that film. You'll learn a lot. Generation Zapped. There's a divestment lobby day happening in Albany on Wednesday, February 27th. Divesting from fossil fuel companies is a huge movement and really needs to get even bigger so that the financial impact really is felt by the fossil fuel companies, so that they start investing their money more in alternative energies, in wind farms and solar farms, etc. So I am going to be driving up from Long Island. If anyone wants a ride, please reach out to me. I believe there may be buses and other lobbying opportunities, but go on to Divest website and you can find out more information about it. But it's really an important movement, and it started in colleges trying to get big universities to divest their endowments, and it's really having an effect. So we also can all do that personally. If anyone has their own personal investments, whether it's a 401k at your business, where you work, or your own investments, take a look at them. Talk to your financial planner and make sure that you're investing in companies that are in alignment with your belief systems, that you're not participating and adding to fossil fuel use in this country. Sunday, March 3rd, Slow Food North Shore, NOFA New York, Long Island Food Coalition, and me, IE Green, along with the Cinema Arts Center, are putting on our 5th annual Long Island Food and Film Feast at the Cinema Arts Center from 6:30 to 9:30. The Cinema Arts Center, just a little plug, it's a real jewel of a theater in our community that is an arts theater. It shows great art films as well as more mainstream films. But they also have a great cafe and offer that space to different nonprofits for meetings. And our slow food meetings once a month happen in that cafe. And this time we will be setting up the cafe at little tables of four and serving a 8-course meal along with short documentaries talking about different food issues that you want to know about. And then we paired it with a speaker, as well as pairing it with the food that's inspired from the film. So it's a great evening. Tickets are now on sale at the Cinema Arts Center. So check that out. There's links on my website to that as well. And now I'd like to share with all of you this week's recipe. I've been seeing all these different pastas made from all different kinds of beans and grains. And this week I decided to try red lentil pasta. I saw a package at Trader Joe's, and I've been staring at it for months, and I decided to pick up a package and see what I can do with it. So I cooked up the red lentil pasta and created this recipe with crispy shallots, tempeh, and arugula. And it was quite good. The pasta is not, you know, doesn't taste like traditional semolina pasta. So you certainly can switch it out for semolina pasta if that's what you want. But it's worth giving this red lentil pasta a try. There's other pastas there too, so feel free to switch out whatever your favorite pasta is in this recipe. So you want one 12-ounce package of pasta. Again, I use the red lentil pasta that I found at Trader Joe's. I use 6 cups of packed arugula, and it might sound like a lot, but it's really not. I mean, when you pack down arugula and then you cook it, it just turns into very little. So put in the 6 cups, and then actually I even, it's not on the recipe, but when I ate it the next day, I added some more spinach to it to even have more greens. 1 package of your favorite tempeh. I used an organic 3-grain tempeh at our food and film feast. We'll be having Barry's tempeh, which is a local homemade tempeh that's really so superior. I wish they carried it in my Whole Foods, but they don't. But right now it's in Brooklyn and Manhattan. Check out Barry's tempeh. 4 large shallots that I sliced into rings so that they were kind of like onion rings. 1/4 cup of olive oil. 1 tablespoon minced garlic. 1 can of fire roasted diced tomatoes with chili pepper. 1 can of organic cannellini beans. 1 tablespoon tamari. 1/2 teaspoon of red pepper flakes or more according to your preference. 1 tablespoon of nutritional yeast. 2 tablespoons of fresh chopped parsley. 1 teaspoon of dried oregano, and salt and pepper to taste. And so I cooked the pasta up according to the directions. I cooked it a little al dente, but it actually, I think, was a little bit better the next day when I cooked it a little bit more. So that's just a suggestion, but you can taste it before you drain it and get it to the consistency that you like. While the pasta is cooking, I sauteed the shallots in 2 tablespoons of olive oil for 5 minutes. Then I added the garlic and sauteed for a couple more minutes. Then I added the red pepper flakes and the arugula and cooked that down until it was wilted. Meanwhile, I cut the tempeh into the cubes. I placed it in a bowl and tossed it with 1 tablespoon of the olive oil. Then I laid it out on a cookie sheet lined with parchment paper and baked it at 400 degrees for 10 minutes. So it got a little bit of golden brown on all sides. Then I removed it from the oven and drizzled some tamari on it so that it got a little salted, you know, seared with some tamari, and then I put it back into the oven for another 5 minutes so that the tamari can really create a nice coating on the tempeh. Then I removed the tempeh from the oven and added it to the wok along with the cooked pasta. Then I added the nutritional yeast, the oregano, the fire-roasted tomatoes, and the beans, and I tossed that all together and cooked it a little bit more in the wok so that the fire-roasted tomatoes and beans had time to heat up. It cooked the pasta just a little bit more and got some of the flavoring into the pasta. Then I garnished it with the parsley. I used 2 tablespoons, but feel free to use more if you would like. And salt and pepper to taste, and that's it. I know lots of people are really trying to cut down their oil, and you can do this also without oil rather than sauteing, vegetables and the shallots in oil. You can, if you have an air fryer, you can put the shallots in an air fryer to get them crispy like that, or just put a tiny drop of oil on them and bake them in the oven to get them crispy, and then do the rest with just a little bit of water instead of oil. So that's up to you. And so now it is my pleasure to introduce all of you to today's guest. Kiana Mickey is the executive director of Just Food, which is a food justice nonprofit based in New York City that galvanizes small-scale farmers, producers, and community members throughout the region. Just Food aims to shift the power, health, and wealth of historically marginalized and under-resourced communities, building towards a sovereign and healthy food system that's rooted in racial, social, economic, and environmental justice, and is the focus of Kiana's work. Kiana earned her Food Hub Management Certificate from the University of Vermont and her BS in Marketing from Hampton University. She serves on the Organizational Council of the National Sustainable Agricultural Coalition, and she's an active CSA member of Rock Steady Farm and Flowers, and volunteers and serves on the boards of the Point CDC and the South Bronx Farmers Market. In addition to her food system and advocacy experience, Kiana has also worked with municipal leaders across the country to help them find unique ways to improve the financial livelihoods of their residents. She worked as the Cities for Financial Empowerment Coalition consultant for 3 years and served as the paid sick leave consultant during the initial public outreach phase of the law back in 2014. Both consultancies were in the New York City Department of Consumer Affairs. So it's my pleasure to introduce you all to Kiana. Kiana, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for making the time to join us today.
Yeah, no, my pleasure.
So I thought maybe we could start with you telling us all a little bit about Just Food. What is their mission, and what kind of work are they doing in New York and beyond?
Yeah, no, thank you. Thanks for having me. I think there are some folks that know Just Food. We've been around in the region and in the city for about 23 years. So, you know, historically, Just Food has been a grassroots nonprofit based in New York City and with partners within 250 miles. So really connecting regional farmers to downstate markets and community folks, and really trying to make local food accessible and affordable. And we've been doing that since 1995. So it was really trying to help how to address like food security as well as rural farm viability in our region. Our first program was CSA, which started with like 5 rural sustainable farmers and like a group of community members. And that's kind of grown over time to now we have 120 CSA sites within our network and engage with about 32 farmers in the region. And I became the ED about 21 months ago, so almost 2 years ago. I had held some other program roles there. I was a CSA manager, policy and advocacy director, and such. But in my tenure and my shift, we've really kind of started looking at food as a right and really trying to shift from just food access to really about food justice. And so really how to support small-scale farmers and producers, how to support communities of all diversity, whether it's people of color, under-resourced, upstate, downstate, like how do you really connect folks to resources and food to make sure that our food system is really reflective of our communities?
Mm-hmm. And so you started working there, well, you started as the executive director 22 months ago, and how long were you working there before that?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Let me think back. Well, I first did my first community advocacy training. I actually started as just a volunteer in 2011. And then shortly thereafter, continued to volunteer around policy and advocacy around the Farm Bill. But my first paid job was the CSA program assistant, and that was 3 years later, so in 2013.
And what have been some of the biggest challenges that you've faced since you've moved into the executive director position?
Yeah, I mean, I think shifting a mission of an organization, especially an organization that's been around so long and is very well beloved by different stakeholders, has been an interesting challenge to do because people kind of commit to a certain lens of food justice or working with certain partners. So I think sometimes when we talk about changing and lifting equity and engaging more folks, sometimes folks feel like they are not centered. I think also trying to find a way to bring resources to a small-scale nonprofit. So kind of pushing against like the nonprofit matrix of only serving the underserved or even just seeing your target community as underserved. Something that we've been trying to do is really see our partners and value their ingenuity and brilliance of the work they do, and really acknowledge that there's inequities in our system. And we're all kind of small-based groups. We're a small nonprofit. We have partners that are either small businesses like farmers or community groups that don't even have unincorporated, you know, they're unincorporated. They don't even have entities of their own in that way. So how do we address these big disparities, health disparities, race disparities, income disparities in our communities by ourselves? We really can't. So it's been a big challenge, but something I've been really excited about is how do we, as Just Food, transition to kind of a capacity builder for those groups, the unheralded communities, the community leaders, the farmers, to really work together and to kind of give that connective tissue and that strength to really amplify our collective power. So again, like really moving from not just, oh, it's good to get great, you know, local food, but really pushing and advocating for who's growing that food, how is it getting into communities, and who in those communities are getting it, are the most impacted, becoming the most activated in that work, whether through policy, running their own, say CSAs or farmers markets, like how do we get the voice and power to the people who've been kept from those resources?
Mm-hmm. And how are you doing it? How do you mobilize people who traditionally have been more disenfranchised and have not been empowered? How do you give them that power so that they feel empowered to work together to make some of these changes happen?
Oh, yeah. I think first it's really being willing to kind of call it out and really kind of making equity our North Star. I think that was really like our first key was not, really, you know, hearing from our stakeholders, like we have to start talking the talk and walking the walk. So it was like shifting the mission. So what you hear now is, you know, if somebody saw us a few years ago, it would say maybe more about just starting CSAs, where now we're really talking about like solidarity economy, like how to shift the health, wealth, and power. I think a lot of folks in this, in food work tend to only see food work as fun or just community driven. And there's a great emphasis on that and it's important, but we're also talking about like shifting wealth and power. So in order to really do that, we found that we have to be, you know, more appropriately scaled to work with our grassroots partners and at the same time leverage our nonprofit status, not to just collect resources just for ourselves, but how to really re-grant that money. So if our partners, say, are a CSA and they want to get further out in the community and also hold social justice principles, how do we help them partner with other groups where they can have new sites, which will help increase their farm viability, you know, because that's bringing in new money. But at the same time, are we helping find new sites that are reaching communities that wouldn't get food otherwise, or local food and this quality food from our region otherwise? So like a good example is like Rock Steady Farm and Flowers. You know, they are a farm in our region. They're based in Millerton. We have mission alignment around our social justice mission. They do CSAs. They had an initial relationship with the Callan Lord Center, and what we were able to do last year was offer them some capacity around a volunteer who is able to be a site coordinator for that CSA to help process SNAP and EBT, to help give information, just to actually manage the CSA site, drop off food to homebound folks when needed. And it was everything. It helped ramp up what had been a pilot project, just impacting a few folks in that community, to actually reaching many. And we just, you know, continue to try to build project by project, model by model with our partners, really meeting them where they're at to really see how to connect, whether it's through connecting farm and food or businesses, restaurants, people who really want to support the resiliency of our food shed. That's where we feel like we're doing the best work. And, you know, with the farm bill around, you know, policy and advocacy is always kind of on our radar. And what we try to do is really make what has been historically inequitable and esoteric information, really break it down on the grassroots level so people feel that they can engage beyond just voting, but, you know, how to, you know what to say when they want to support food advocacy in their region, in their city, in their neighborhood, and giving folks those tools through trainings and organizing to feel more empowered so they can speak up and also have a say in what's coming in their neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. You know, I get the whole idea of being able to support the farm with like the site coordinator. I can imagine the change that makes, having one person really focus on that. But how can you make that a paid position? Because one of the things that I hear from Washington, you know, so many people are volunteering because this work is so important in doing it. But part of the problem is that this work needs to be honored and be paid so that people can make a living. So how do
no,
you get
100%.
A position like that?
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead. That's fine.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's what we've been trying to do. When we say like shifting that power into health and wealth is all of our community partners. And so in that example, what started off as a volunteer, Element was actually compensated with a CSA share. So that Stephen was our the site coordinator for that season. So he actually got a CSA share, which, was really helpful to him. But what we try to do is with each partnership, with each engagement, we try to see if there's other grants and fundraising that we could do together. So it's bringing resources to the organization to offer capacity, but also find ways to bring money to the partners and re-grant. So hopefully as that site continues to grow, we can, and bring in other sites to that farm, that there will be enough money to kind of continue to shift. But a really good place to start, and something that we heard from, at least in that example, was having a CSA share. So him having like the same box of food that I was getting as a full price CSA member really made a difference for him in his life.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, that's good. Because I remember, I had an interesting talk with Malik Yakini, who you probably know mm-hmm. from the Detroit Black Community mm-hmm. Food Security Network. And we were talking about, all the opportunities that you've been hearing in the news about, the regentrification of Detroit and how there's all these opportunities for young people, this and that. And he said, yeah, but it's more like white young people. It's not, yeah. I mean, the money, the opportunities are not really there for the people that are already struggling, because they don't have the parents to give them the startup money or the good credit to get those loans, or the background to bring that needed resources in so that they become the owners of the new little cafes that are in their communities.
Yep.
How do you have any ideas or thoughts around that? How do we change that? How do we get real funding, people to take that leap of faith and chance, so that the people that are living in those communities are given the opportunities new regentrified communities.
Exactly. I mean, this is exactly why we shifted our mission and our direction in this work. So CSA is just one example, but, we have multiple programs where it's really that going from not just access, but really centering these historically marginalized communities, under-resourced communities, to really acknowledge what are resources that have been purposely kept from us to build that. Another great example of our work in doing that in motion is our Community Chef program. So we offer training around social organizing, grassroots organizing, food justice, and with the Community Chef Element piece, we offer facilitation and organizing skills and basic culinary skills. So we're giving folks in the community some basic culinary skills as well as organizing, so they're able to actually become community chefs. You don't need, the biggest degree or the fanciest degree. A lot of times people want to, learn how to utilize food, grow food, and cook food from folks that look like them. So once folks are able to go through our training, we offer those trainings to organizations and individuals at times, at a sliding scale. And when folks finish the training, it's a 4-day training, they're already engaged, ready, and primed to be able to be community chefs however they want to do that work. And what we try to do in addition to that is identify opportunities to do cooking chef demos at CSAs and farmers markets and health and wellness fairs. And something that we've been looking forward to in 2019 is increasing our partnerships in for-profit businesses that want to increase health and wellness in their workplaces, and finding ways to build a series and giving more community chefs more consistent opportunities, paid opportunities. These are all always paid opportunities within the community to do the work that they love. And now that they have that skill set, they're actually able to train other folks. So it's kind of an iterative train-of-trainer process and popular education approach that we use. Similar with our farming and local sourcing, we really try to encourage all of our partners and folks to utilize our value chain map. So they're very aware of where the local CSA sites are, community-run farmers markets, and their local farmers, urban farmers, so the hyper-local folks, as well as the regional. And we really are trying to find, in 2019, ways to kind of explore through our programs how to increase local sourcing at that wholesale level, as well as even just through our markets. So if we are supporting a market, say, in East in Central Harlem, like Project Harmony, if their community chef is doing a demo there, are they buying from the CSA farmer who also has a CSA site at a community garden? So is this regional food? Absolutely. Is it supporting sourcing of hyperlocal food? Absolutely. And it's also an opportunity for a chef in that community to have a job and folks to be able to see people who do it. Something else that's been really important to me is building and fostering community leadership from our communities and within. So while Just Food right now, and happy to be like a very tiny but mighty staff, we have five folks, three full-time people. I'm really happy to say like we're all from our community work. And even in the past 2 years, I've been able to hire two folks that were actually past community partners, folks that have gone through our trainings, have done other grassroots work. And to be able to bring them into full-time jobs, I think, is also really important. So it's not just, you know, for me, it's kind of finding the progression from volunteer to stipend to actual jobs, and offering the opportunity to gain experience to work with us where they can leverage that beyond. Other ways, too, is different grants and opportunities. So talking about funding, it's really kind of challenging to find funding that wants to support small grassroots with small budgets, as well as project-specific work. But every time we do and we try to seek those kind of funds, we really try to find ways to repartner, to fund grants to really hire within our community. We recently were part of, we're starting 2019 with a specialty mushroom grant. It's federally funded, and we're in partnership with Cornell Extension, Grow NYC, and Farm School. And I'm just really proud to bring on Shefali Patel, who is like a longstanding teacher and practitioner of the work, and to be able to hire her to work with us in order to train and teach Cornell educators and get that mushroom education and potential enterprise opportunities downstate is, I think, a really good example of where Just Food is going and how to bring in jobs, you know, that are good for the community, but actually are for people from the community.
I'd like to backtrack this a little bit. Tell me more about this mushroom grant. Well, tell me, explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. And it's a super new grant, so we're still figuring out all the different parts. But what we're able to bring to this mushroom grant, you know, Cornell Extension has existing mushroom cultivation courses. And what they reached out to us in the downstate was saying, like, they really wanted to make sure that as many folks as possible were getting the opportunity to access these courses. And they also wanted to partner in a grant to offer opportunity to find resources to not just do the cultivation and teaching classes, but could we also encourage ways to create better authentic relationships downstate? Are there gardens, community gardens in our, you know, five boroughs that could potentially be sites for mushroom growing and cultivation? Could these be potential business practices? But even before then, also wanting to make sure that the teaching approach was consistently being more popular ed, like more engaging, more dynamic, more inclusive to our broader spectrum of folks. So we're really proud and happy to embark on this journey of starting this grant where we're helping build curriculum to you know, further integrate trainer models and popular education within Cornell Extension educators as well as downstate educators. It's really good to give us a chance to explore potential local markets. There's just a lot of, you know, folks are, as people start shifting their lifestyles towards more vegetable-based diets and plant-based diets, people are starting to look for more, you know, options in terms of where they're, not just what they're eating, but where it's being grown. Mushrooms offer a great opportunity because of the mediums that they grow in, to be grown in spaces that don't take up too much space, whether it's a trailer or on logs and, you know, certain areas indoors even. So it's really suitable and really appropriate for, like, downstate opportunities where land and size is such a premium. The other thing, too, is food justice. I think a lot of us can work on food or be very excited about food, but we don't always think about who are our teachers, who is being taught, and how far is that information being offered. Who are educators, who are future leaders. And, you know, the reason why we kind of reiterate and highlight an approach like popular ed is it really kind of speaks to not just the value that the teacher offers, but also the community or the students. We all have shared learning because it's continual learning, and it gives space for folks to be able to highlight what their expertise and be seen as expertise, kind of a learner-centered approach. So it's really good to have folks from the community, in particular like Shefali, who has experience growing, you know, on a larger scale as well as a hyper-local scale, to be somebody who can offer that knowledge to other trainers, and educators be more rooted in food justice as well as other training techniques. And at the same time, in the near future, you know, part of the grant is to also then offer these trainings, you know, to students. And, you know, where it can go in terms of enterprise is, you know, skyrocketing. There's a lot of interest and opportunity and good pricing that we see in local markets, at farmers markets around mushrooms. And we definitely want folks of color, under-resourced folks, to be able to be experts in that so they can get a part of that economy.
Great. That's great. Let's take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, I actually would like you to even go a little bit more into what food justice is really meaning to you as opposed to food access. I think people just think, you know, getting access to healthy food is where all it's about. And I think we're talking obviously much deeper about real food justice issues. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Kiana Mickey from Just Food, and we will be right back.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information. The kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one Progressive Radio Network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and the industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis. And there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right? Thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Everybody, and welcome back.
For those of you just joining us, my guest today is Kiana Nikki. She's the executive director of Just Food, and we're talking about food justice and issues around food access. So, Kiana, right before the break, I was asking you, if you could just go a little bit more in depth, what the difference is when you talk about food justice versus just food access.
Sure. In our work and what we kind of lift up in our food justice curriculum is really kind of separating and understanding the spectrum of like towards food sovereignty. So like food access kind of really tends to just lean on the focus on just being the linkage between the food, who's the grower, who's the eater, and the exchange of that. But without an equity lens, you miss the opportunity to really unpack or to really see who is missing in part of that chain. So if you're just looking at the chain, it just says, grower to eater and distributor maybe. But when you have an equity lens, you start to question who's the owner, who's the farmer. Are we supporting folks that are small scale versus large scale? Is that important? What's the difference between that scale? Same, are we only looking at certain communities as consumers, as people who are absorbing? Or are we also seeing that there are opportunities to also buy and engage and have an economy with them? So with food justice, it's really seeing food as like an intersectional tool, like food is a right. And if we really believe that food is a right, and healthy food, then it should be available to all people, you know, regardless of race, income, or gender. And for us at Just Food, it's really about how do we shift that paradigm in our work. So increasing CSA, again, to making sure that healthy food is getting to more communities that may have less options, maybe are vulnerable, LGBTQ, POC, you know, people of color communities. Are folks really having the option to get the quality food that we know, is thriving in our region? And same, are we supporting farmers, hyper-local farmers that may not be able to have a big market or be able to, do wholesale or vend at, say, a larger supermarket? Are there still markets that folks can really know their farmer and get their food directly? And in the region, are we supporting those folks that really want to farm and stay on the land? Are we supporting small scale, mid scale, large scale? You know, food is always, local food, and good food is good food. But with an equity lens and a food justice lens, you really start to see how important it is to shift the power to make sure that all parts of the chain are diverse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so important, so important. One of the challenges that I have heard in CSAs and in serving historically marginalized communities is that most CSAs are designed so that people pay up front and have to come up mm-hmm. with a large chunk of money. How have you been helping to address that in making it more accessible to people who might not be able to come up with all the money up front at the beginning of the season? Are there more CSA models coming out that allow people to pay weekly when they get that box? How's that working?
Yeah, so Just Food has a long history in CSA, but also, which is historically been built to support the farmer enterprise element. But we really try to expand that model to make sure that the members, the community members, it says CSA can be as accessible and affordable to as many communities as possible. So, we continue to offer technical resource and assistance and training on helping community groups that are, say, the CSA group side on how to accept SNAP and EBT, and they can have that as an option in their CSA to, offer it to more folks. We also offer tools and workshops around information around building sliding scales or, other models that kind of help, like revolving loan funds. Like, how can the group be able to fundraise or find ways to bring in money so it's not at a cost of the farmer? They're still getting the price that they deserve. But it's paying them up front with other fundraise money So folks that have less or need a little bit more time can actually put it back into the fund, but the farmer's still getting it when they need. So for us, it's really been continuing to find not just communities that are still missing, and maybe CSA is that model for them and maybe not. And on the other hand, within those, can we continue to find funding to offer trainings and tools and resources to help farmers accept SNAP, for CSAs maybe to find a community-based partner so they can accept SNAP? Or, at our farmers markets, are they accepting SNAP? Other incentives like health bucks and FMNP, those are currently not available at the CSA level or the food box level, but we find that there's kind of a balance of wanting to meet the needs of the community members and affordability and accessibility, as well as still supporting farmers and increasing their farm viability. And we find that these have been strategies for over 20 years that have really helped diversify CSAs in certain communities, as well as continue to explore what that price point is and how to find more ways to engage and support local farmers.
Just for those that don't know, when you said health bucks, you know, those are the kind of programs that are like two for one, where at a lot of farmers markets, you can use, you know, health bucks where for $5, you can get $10 worth of produce. It's incentivizing people who are on food stamps to buy more fruits and vegetables. Is that right?
Okay. And what we try to do is encourage those at local markets. So that is like a multiplier effect. So if we're helping people find local CSAs or local farmers markets, that when you get those incentives, like a health bucks, or if you know, like you can use your SNAP. And with SNAP, in particular at CSAs, when SNAP members are, you know, use their SNAP at their CSA, they're actually able to buy not the full season ahead. They're actually able to use their SNAP benefits just 2 weeks ahead. So very similar to some of the other farm share models that are out there.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of work is Just Food doing to bring the message of healthier food? I mean, we hear so much about how the marketing so often is, you know, marketing of junk food and processed food is so heavily geared towards under-marginalized communities and you know, it's just out of balance, obviously. And then, you know, of course, in those communities, there's all these fast food restaurants and there's, you know, more challenging opportunities to get healthy food with good supermarkets in those communities. So is Just Food playing any role in that, or are you more, is that not your focus and another group is focusing on that?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of different groups try to find it, but I think just like us, when you're a smaller based group and your budgets are very small, you know, what you're able to do can also be, a challenge. So, I mean, I think for us, what we're really trying to do with 2019, we think that communications is really important. So what we've been trying to do is leverage what we have as much as possible, whether that's leveraging grant dollars to increase communication so people are aware of the models in their community, or it's, you know, lifting up information so folks are really, you know, learn a little bit more about food justice. So in 2019, we're really putting some energy towards increasing our social media. So we're much more active and vibrant. Say even in the past like 5 years or 3 years, as social media has grown, we found our partners and us have found like social media has been really helpful. So Instagram and Twitter and Facebook has been helpful in sharing information about our breadth of partners and networks and lifting up what food justice is and could look like. Another thing that we're really trying to do is continuing to raise funds around our value chain map. Just Food historically has had a map.
Can you talk about the value chain map? Wait, I'm stopping you.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit? Sorry. Some people don't know because you've mentioned value chain map a couple times, and I don't think people know what that is.
Yeah. If people go to the Just Food website, justfood.org, and you scroll down to our FAQ page, you'll see a heading that says what we do, and you'll be able to click on our value chain map. And that's kind of our branding of how to highlight and increase awareness of the breadth of partners. So for us, it's been a map that is showing CSA sites. So when you click on it, you're able to see within the five boroughs where the sites are, what their past season distribution information was, timing, location. You're able to sort. We now are able and have built the map out to also now offer community-run farmers markets, the farmers markets in our network. And that's really been great in order to increase healthy food access and information. So now you're also able to find them and what other different vegetables and dairy and product and what other value-added products are farmers able to bring and vend to folks down in the state. And now what we're able to do is continue to add on farmers and producers. So if you really took like a bigger scope of the map, you could drill down all the way into your neighborhood or go as far within 250 miles and see where your actual farmer is growing and get more information. So for us, it's not just fundraising just for our organizational level work, but we really think it's important for folks to be able to have as much transparency as possible to who's growing their food and how they can get it in their communities. And you know, it's hard because, you know, a group like us, like a small nonprofit like us, we don't have a communications budget of millions of dollars. And then yet you'll see, you know, other groups that maybe are funded by venture capitalists or other money or have bigger budgets or have lobbyists, you know, like they have real big budgets. And then you're able to see these splashy ads and advertisements. And it makes people think like that's really the only way they can get food, maybe through a sign-up or a delivery service, and not know like there can actually be a CSA or farmer's market within your neighborhood. So, you know, we're hoping to continue to increase our communications budget. We'll also leverage our partners and even things like this, talking and sharing folks. We always see, you know, a little bit bump in interest. So I'm always happy to share that our website is justfood.org. Our value chain map helps folks find small-scale farmers and producers and local food projects within the five boroughs and the farmers that support them. And our social media is at JustFoodNYC, and we're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Mm-hmm. And do your small-scale farmers that you work with, do they also sign up for, like, the website Local Harvest that, you know, lists so many CSAs and farmers markets and things like that? Do you help the small scale farmers find other places where they can also get their word out about their mission?
Oh yeah, we definitely encourage. We want to increase farm viability as much as possible. You know, we think there's ways that we can do that with our programming, but we definitely encourage farmers to find, you know, their new members as far as wide as possible. You know, I think some folks. Local Harvest has kind of been a long-standing map where some of that information's there. And I think it, you know, it depends on the farmer if they feel like they've been getting those hits. And that was one of the reasons why we decided to really build out our map and continue to build out our map, is what we were hearing was that small-scale farmers were having a harder time finding markets and coming downstate and really wanting to. We were getting calls almost, you know, multiple times a week, or actually multiple times a week, almost sometimes daily, where there are just farmers who have food and just needed to find connections to whether it was businesses or community groups downstate. And similar, we started to see like there were people who still, even when you look at the map, there were still areas in our, you know, in our city that didn't have a CSA site or a farmer's market site, even beyond our own network. You know, there's other networks of food access going on in the city. So what we decided to do was really focus our map in not just having a pin on where we were at, you know, initially just CSAs, but it was really important to show the breadth of our partners. And in doing that, we're actually supporting small-scale folks, where these other maps sometimes didn't always lend that information. You know, we, you know, in the state, we have such a big food shed in a big state. You know, sometimes we would hear from folks that were like, I wanted to start a CSA or a farmer's market, but I needed farmers. When I reached out, you know, to certain lists, or groups, they were way too big, or they didn't come downstate. So So what we wanted to make sure was that there were clear information and very transparent, so you're able to get directly to their sites and call them and have their emails. And we just help with the matchmaking. We're helping increase visibility, but we also want to help make those relationships. So we thought like this would be a good map. So definitely, I think there's some folks that use Local Harvest and other resources and other sites by other organizations, but our map is really focused on the folks that we know or want to kind of come into the community and sell and vend, and same mm-hmm. Folks that really want to get community food out there mm-hmm. and increase community.
Yeah, I was looking at it. It's great. It's great. It's very user-friendly, so I really recommend people checking it out and supporting these local farms. And so
thank
before
you.
We run out of time, how can my listeners help support Just Food? What do you need besides obviously finances?
Oh, obviously money. Yeah. Well, yes. I'm never going to not say that because we're a nonprofit. So
right.
If folks wanted to and are able to, they're able, you know, I'm happy for folks to see us. We're going through a website relaunch, but definitely check out our page, justfood.org. There's a donation button. That would be really helpful, but there's definitely other ways. We're always looking for volunteers to help us with particular programs, like helping build out the website. We just recently moved out of our office and moving into co-working spaces, so we really, by spring, summer, would love to find different partner spaces that we can maybe engage in a short amount of time. You know, even just like $300 or $500 can really help support those opportunities. Community chef demos. If you have a workplace that has a health and wellness fair, or you want to have a little bit more information about food justice, or you want like a fun demo, definitely reach out to us. We're able to offer community chef demos around the five boroughs. Same if you have a wholesale need, you're a restaurant, you're a bodega, you're a small business owner, you make value-added products in the city, you're, you know, a small restaurateur, entrepreneur, definitely reach out to us. We have this map, the database that we have, we'll be able to connect you to small-scale farmers and producers. So when people are interested in that, that is really helpful. People who want to offer capacity and volunteer, interns to help us do some of this work, marketing, outreach, graphic design is always a need for us. But, coming up soon, we'll definitely have a spring campaign, and we really want to find ways to help support our partners.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. And we're really almost out of time, but just quickly, when is your Just Food Conference? Because your Just Food Conference is always great, and people can come to that and learn so much more about you and about what's going on. Are you having that?
Yeah. No, thank you. Thanks for the plug. Well, yeah, we will officially be telling folks, so I will be sharing something for your listeners earlier than some folks might hear, our annual conference, we're actually shifting it to a biannual conference. So we're focusing on more community-based events throughout the year and other convenings. So definitely stay tuned and check us out on Just Food NYC on our social media platforms. But definitely continue to stay in touch with us and look out for more information as we gear up, because right now we're planning for our 2020 conference. So 2018 was so great. We really want to make sure that we're able to, you know, to really amplify folks even more and get all the folks in, and really want to make it a great success. So we'll see you in 2020 at the conference. But anyone wants to support can support us this year too. Thank you for asking.
Kiana, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Time. You're welcome. Everyone who's been listening, thank you for joining us on IE Cream with Bhavani on the Progressive Radio Network, and we'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.